C2SP. Number 2A.
Now, we take the text of spiritualism, and in the epitome book, I try to summarize the whole subject of the chapter spiritualism. I said there in bold letters, you have it, scientific understanding reveals that in the one infinite spirit, God and his likeness, spiritual man, are inseparable. So in that tone you have Christian Science versus spiritualism. You have Christian Science that shows now the point of understanding. That's the word as science, namely understanding God. So that we will find here a lot of indications how to understand, what to understand. And what it reveals is that God is the one and only spirit which knows no matter, and that is showing us the coexistence of God and man as spiritual idea. Because we know we left the chapter marriage where Mrs. Eddy was driving, pointing the way to the last page, where she would show that fundamentally marriage is the wedding of God and man as an inseparable unity, as one. And now the chapter on spiritualism shows how that is possible. So the subject is spirit as the only in regard to man, that principle and idea is one. That God and man is one, so that there is no need for spirits, for material corporeality, material beings, etc., etc. Just the one spirit that includes principle and idea, God and man being inseparable, and that inseparability will come out in the last part and very definitely. Now, this chapter, to my sense, has first a paragraph as an introduction, and it seems to be a very interesting paragraph because it gives a preview, so to say, of the whole chapter, especially distinguishing between the three parts of the chapter, so that we have a lead here what the three chapters want to bring out. So it takes the text there, the introductory paragraph, and look at it from the standpoint of those three parts. Always dominated naturally by the roof category of spirit. So she says, mortal existence, the moment you have mortal existence, you have the counterfeit of soul and life, is an enigma. So mortal existence is really something which we can't see right through. It seems to be full of mysteries. Every day, she says, is a mystery. We really don't know why we are here, from where we come, what we have been before birth, where we existed before, what is called birth, what we are here for, what's the purpose of our life here, what is the end of our life, what is after so-called death, what is the long trend of our life, we just don't know. It is as if every new second would be a surprise. It is an enigma. Every day seems to be a mystery, humanly. She speaks here about mortal existence. And the testimony of the corporeal senses. Again, you have the corporeal senses, the counterfeit of soul, cannot inform us what is real and what is delusive. She takes up the question of reality and says, actually, mortal existence is an enigma, it's an absolute mystery, we really don't know what is actually real and what is unreal, and the physical senses cannot inform us, cannot teach us, and cannot say us what is really real and what is delusive. What is idea, what is illusion, cannot show us. Then, so we have defined that mortal existence is undefinable here at this point as what the identities of being are. We just don't know really what it is all about. But then it comes the but, and always when the sentence starts with a but, we have to be attentive, because then something important is being presented. And so we come to what the second part of the chapter wants to tell us. But the revelations of Christian Science unlock the treasures of truth. So now, compared with the mystery of mortal existence, is now the revelation of Christian Science. You can see that mystery is being solved through science, that in a science there are no enigmas, there is no mystery. Science can explain everything. So that mystery, that enigma, must be solved. And that cannot be solved through the physical senses, but through science. Again, we have that comparison between science and the senses. So the revelations of Christian Science unlock the treasures of truth. The second part will show how we can unlock really the treasures of truth, how we can reveal through the divine mind reading, what is real and what is unreal, that this revelation of divine mind reading unlocks the reality and uncovers what is unreality. Whatever is false or sinful can never enter the atmosphere of spirit. Now we have a tone of spirit, the overall tone of spirit coming in and says, in that one spirit, in that atmosphere of spirit, nothing wrong can enter. Therefore, there will be no bewilderment there, nothing mysterious there. Everything will be clear cut. Then, an indication of the third part of annihilating the false sense, going out from the roof category of spirit, there is but one spirit. So this is a great introduction to spiritualism, giving the basis there is but one spirit, there are not many spirits, therefore there is but one spirit. The side note is even better, the infinite one spirit, meaning that it is the only spirit. So man is never God. But spiritual man, made in God's likeness, reflects God. In the third part, we'll see the coexistence of God and man, of God and spiritual man. And here she introduces it and says, that man is a reflection of that one spirit. He reflects God's spirit. That's the first time that we hear this in the textbook. In this scientific reflection, it is not just a reflection, in this scientific reflection. So in order to take away the image of a mirror which has a reflection in it, she says that is not a good simile for it. It is a scientific reflection. We must see that reflection from science and not from the symbol of a mirror. In the scientific reflection, the ego and the father are inseparable. Can you hear? She brings it out. First she said, man is the reflection of God. Then man and the father are inseparable, are one. That's the third part. Bring out that oneness of God and man being inseparable. Then a negative aspect of spiritualism, the supposition, that's the counterfeit of science, the supposition that corporeal beings are spirits, or that there are good and evil spirits, is a mistake. So science explains away the spirits as a mistake. They don't explain it away and say it has no substance. It just says something much more deeper and says it's just a mistake. It doesn't exist. You don't have to wipe it away. It is just an erroneous statement. It is a mistake. So in this introductory paragraph, she indicates what she wants to show us, that in the first part she wants to show us that from the physical standpoint, we can never see the identities of being. We need for that the spiritual sense of life in order to know what life is all about. And that will solve the enigma of mortal existence. In order to do that, you have the second part then, which shows this must be a revelation. And that revelation comes through science and not through any kind of inspiration. It is embedded and rooted in science, and science will show you how the divine mind reveals itself to us and brings from undercover all the false mistakes. And finally, in the third part, showing that in the third part the mistakes are wiped away, so that the only thing that is established and remains is God's coexistence with man, the inseparability of God and man, of spirit and spiritual man. So this is just an overall view which helps us to take our attention and say, now I wonder how Mrs. Eddy is going to work out this problem. And it is really quite fascinating now to see how through these three parts she is giving us a very clear picture on the oneness of spirit versus spiritualism. So we go over to the next page in the epitome book and start with part one. That part one we have epitomized as soul and life. It isn't soul as life. It is soul and life, both synonymous terms, have equal value. Whereas if it would be soul as life, then soul would be the dominant and life then the subtone. But here both soul and life have equal value. They are main tones. Now, in order to show the meaning of what is meant in it, I have given there four points. First, to think about it before one approaches the text. Point one is, notice how the standpoint of scientific understanding is contrasted with an unscientific standpoint of belief, illusions, ignorance, supposition, assumption, incorrect theories, etc. You see what the first point wants to do? We are here at the point of the word as science. That's the place value of this chapter. And as science, we know that it is the point of understanding that must be brought out. So here in this chapter, she would have to show the standpoint of scientific understanding and contrast it with an unscientific approach. So constantly in the text we'll find these terms that are showing the scientific standpoint or the unscientific standpoint, so that we can know how to approach the subject. Now, I give you just a few runs on these terms that are in here. I like to do that. You remember that from other chapters. I always feel that when I see a main point in a chapter, in a part of a chapter, or in a main tone, that I should go over the text and pick out those terms that are indicative for that tonality, so as to make sure that these terms are there, that the tone is there, and also to see that that tone recurs and recurs and recurs so that the quantity of it gives us the quality of the interpretation. If I see that in the text we have constantly terms like science, scientific, and learn, and logic, then I know that this is a main subject, and that if that recurs, it is a quantity when it recurs, and so gives to the first part the quality of being scientific. Now, actually, in these few pages that cover the first part, we have, there are only 8 pages, and we have the recurrence of terms that indicate science, science, Christian science, divine science, and so on, always science, scientific recurs again and again, to learn and the logic of science, so that there are over 20 positive terms that indicate that we have to learn this subject as a science, and compares it with all the unscientific standpoint in the text. In that text, the unscientific standpoint is brought out in about 40 references. That's quite a lot on 8 pages, that it is repeated. The unscientific standpoint is constantly being brought out through terms like belief, illusion, dream, deflection, incorrect, erroneous, presupposition, presupposes, supposedly, assumption, theory, unreasonable, mistake, impossible, unscientific, ignorance. Can you hear those terms? And if you like to make a good study of it, you just go through the text and pick out those terms. And I like to do that when I have a whole list, because that impresses then my thought more than if I just say it's science versus unscientific. This is not very impressive. It's still true. It's still right. But when one sees how many different ways in which we are thinking unscientifically, then it is good to have a whole list about it and see, yes, we go out from beliefs, from illusions, from incorrect reasoning, from erroneous statements, or from preposition and supposition, I don't know what, you see, so that it infiltrates, so to say, our consciousness and says, look here, you only have to, you have to see that you are thinking and reasoning and learning scientifically, and not in an unscientific way. Then we have another point, point 2. The standpoint of this part is analysis. You know that already. And this analysis is shown by such phrases as something is or is not, something can be or cannot be, or by such terms as cannot, can never, is not, has no, and so on. Can you see, when one reads a text and constantly encounters in the text the recurrence of just constantly saying, you know, something is or is not, it has or it has not, it can do or it cannot do, then you really feel that this is a subject, a main subject in the text, that what is being brought out to show what are the identities of being, what are not the identities of being. So, again here, we find over 50 times in those few pages statements constantly recurring that says something is, or that something is ever is, or are, or cannot, or can never, or is never, or nothing is, and has no, and is neither nor, and no, and are not, and is not, and does not, and it's impossible. Can you hear how these terms just hammer it in? That here is a text where she analyzes what is, what is not, what can be, what cannot be, what So that the isness of what is comes out, and so to say, the impossibility of what is not comes out. And so we have that sense of analysis of what is and what is not. Point three is then spirit, the overtone of this chapter. Here in part one means that there is only one spirit, the infinite one spirit. Or that spirit is incorporeal and is infinite, that God is the only spirit, that spirit knows no opposite, that spirit can only express itself spiritually, that spirit is supreme, omnipresent, and omnipotent. Can you hear the tone of spirit in it? That sometimes that fascinates a student and other students are not touched by it. I'm fascinated. I'm always fascinated by the exactness of Mrs. Eddy's tonality, and naturally language, but especially by her tonality. That we know spirit through many, many dozens of ideas characterizing spirit. Spirit is substance, spirit is unfoldment, spirit is development, spirit unfolds, spirit has fruits, spirit has order, spirit has substance, and so on, with the worship of spirit, the purity of spirit, reality of spirit, etc., etc. And therefore it is fascinating to see that she has a whole part in that chapter where she uses spirit only in one and only way to bring out that spirit is the only and the infinite and the only and the infinite and that it's spiritual. She doesn't touch the other ideas of spirit. You see? And that is that which naturally gives us the structure of the textbook, which says, yes, here, really, the spirit is only considered from one very definite standpoint, namely, from the standpoint of the word of science that has first to define what spirit is in its scientific sense, that there is only one spirit, and that spirit is infinite. So constantly, when we go through the text, no matter if we are then in the first, second, or third subject, say in the subject of soul, we will constantly come in with some overall tone of spirit. Or if we are in the subject of truth, we will come in with the overall tone of spirit and say, well, spirit is only characterized spiritually. And always bring out the same thing, so to say, that spirit is the only, is the supremacy of spirit, the infinite spirit, there is no other spirit. This is fascinating for me. For a scientific mind, it's absolutely fascinating. You can take any other book that people write, they will write in a very flowery way and not in that strict tonality as Mrs. Eddy wrote the textbook or has been under the order to write the textbook. So when we see that we have the overall tone of spirit as the infinite one spirit, then we must see that the next category is the first part of soul and life. So in point four, we have soul and life. Again, we can go through the text and see, is it actually so? So what I say here, you must take the liberty to see if I'm right or if I'm wrong, if I make something up, or if it's my interpretation, or if it's actually in the text. You have constantly to challenge me through the text, not through your individual opinion. If you like it or don't like it, that doesn't touch me in the least. You can like it or not like it. That doesn't make a difference to reality, nor to the text interpretation. But go to the text and see, does the text support, really, this interpretation? And as you go through these few pages, you will see that the tone of soul and life is constantly brought out. Naturally, it is brought out in different terms, but always in the same tonality, always in the tonality so as to say, what are the identities of being? Identity, soul of being, life. How can I see those identities of being? Through spiritual sense that is immortal. Spiritual sense, soul that is immortal, life. These are renderings that we find here, that it is only the spiritual sense of life that can define the identity of being. A mortal sense of life cannot say what is and what is not. That it is always the spiritual sense of life against the material sense of life that can define what is and what is not. So that the material sense of thing is always wrong, is always false, but that the spiritual sense of things is always the isness of things. These are the renderings that we have here. So that we can really feel, oh yes, now she appeals to the spiritual sense of being within us that alone is able to analyze what is and what is not. It's as simple as that. The terms that I have given, the description that I have given is very simple, but that's the profound thing of that part. That does not recur anymore in the whole textbook. Here it is the only time, because it's the word as science here, the text, that has to define first scientifically what is and what is not. And that we can only define it through the spiritual sense, soul, that can show us what is life. And if we take these two categories now into consciousness, first of all, that there is only one being that is real, namely the spiritual realm is real. And then you ask, now, what is that spiritual realm that is real? And you come to the second hierarchy of soul and life that tells us what is and what is not. And then now we come how that whole subject is evolved through seven, here through six subjects. In each subject of mind and spirit and soul and so on, it always shows what is. What are, so to say, the identities of being from the point of view of mind? What are the identities of being from the point of view of spirit? What are the identities of being from the point of view of soul? And then of life, and truth, and love. And so we get the knowledge what is and what is not.